This is Colin Dixon with Endscreen Media, and I've got a question for you. What is the best approach to video security for an OTT TV provider? If you're getting by with simple digital rights management, you are inviting trouble. Steve Hawley, head of Piracy Monitor and my partner in the upcoming Video Security Summit, interviews Christopher Levy, CEO and founder of ByDRM, to understand what is a better approach to security. Mr. Levy runs down the history of DRM and why it represents the bare minimum security for video. He explains why DRM with watermarking is a better approach and why implementing watermarking in the cloud at the origin streaming server is the only scalable approach. Now, you can hear much more from ByDRM and many more video security experts at the Video Security Summit on October 19th and 20th. And Endscreen Noise listeners, you can sign up for the conference for free by clicking on the link in the description of this podcast posting. We'll see you there. Take it away, Steve.
Hello, everyone. Hey, today we're really pleased to catch up with Christopher Levy. He is the CEO of ByDRM, which has been running a mile a minute to catch piracy. And we want to thank you so much for taking time with us today. It's really great to talk to you. And also, we want to thank your company for supporting the Video Security Summit. Tell us about yourself and tell us about ByDRM.
Sure. And, thanks for the invite. We've really enjoyed the maturation of Piracy Monitor, and we're really happy to be on board for the summit and just in general.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my background, I was in the Army. I got out of the military in 94, and I moved to Austin, Texas, because my father had moved his family here. And it seemed like a really awesome place to go set down my roots. And so moved out here to Lake Travis, right outside Austin, and took a job at a venue called The Backyard, which was a legendary music venue out here. And I, you know, started by working security, and then I worked in the restaurant. And one day I noticed reading online during the breaks that, streaming music was starting to become a thing. And I obviously was a consumer of some of it myself. We were, you know, listening to real audio, you know, 12.2 kilobit webcasts and audio streams. And at the time, my good friend who I worked for, who was the assistant stage manager, he mentioned that more and more music acts were passing through and they were inquiring about webcasting and did the venue have internet connectivity, et cetera. So, you know, I got the crazy idea to take a part of my money that the Army gave me when I retired. And I started wiring clubs here in Austin, Texas. So I wired The Backyard with an ISDN line in 94. We wired the Music Hall and La Zona Rosa, which were two other direct events venues, which at the time were two of Austin's biggest music venues. And then we also wired Stubbs Barbecue. So we had relationships with Charlie Jones, Charlie Walker, Charles Atoll, and this group of folks were the folks that later became C3, which then became Live Nation, and now they run Austin City Limits and Lollapalooza. So we had a lot of pull in the music scene here in Austin in the 90s. And, you know, one day I was just working another job, bussing tables, and I get a text message and call back to the venue, and they say, hey, we've got this guy on the phone, Todd Wagner, and his partner, Mark Cuban, and they want you to do a Willie Nelson webcast from The Backyard. And that kind of kicked off a pretty substantial career in the early, early days of streaming. My group, then we founded the group Click Here Productions, which is right over here somewhere, right there. And so Click Here was one of the preeminent webcasting companies in the business. And my partner, Troy Snyder, and I later sold that company to CMGI. And then we had invented the multi-CDN right before we sold the product. Troy stayed on. The company later became Nine Systems, was acquired by Akamai. I, on the other hand, was approached by Microsoft to look at the streaming security space. And so in 2001, I spun out into the DRM space. And, you know, I think it's pretty well known. I've been firmly rooted in that space for going on about, you know, 19 or 20 years now. ByDRM as a company, the original concept was created in 2004. And to be really honest with you, it was just a reflexive idea based on another gentleman who had a company called ByCDN at the time. And he was doing really well in the early days. No one totally understood how search engines worked. And so at the time, you know, it seemed like a brilliant idea. And, you know, obviously it's what we do as a company, but that was kind of the nexus of how BuyDRM came into existence. And so we're now 20 years down the road as a company.
That's a pretty fascinating story, and it would be nice to have a longer conversation offline sometime, but that's not here. You know, so your company's called BuyDRM, which makes an obvious reference to digital rights management. When you tell your music story that way, I can imagine that it came up pretty early on in conversation that some of these high profile acts wanted to protect what they were doing.
Yeah.
So isn't piracy something that kind of transcends the capability of DRM alone? How did BuyDRM arrive at the need to focus on piracy and anti-piracy? And from your perspective, what's been your business case?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, in the early days, we were first using DRM for music, obviously. So that was kind of the first application of it because streaming video still wasn't even mature. And, you know, during those early periods of times, for me, the reason that I fell into the space and why BuyDRM exists and kind of, you know, to tie into your question, you know, at the time we had it was called Navisite Streaming Media. We had done a deal with Microsoft, the net credits program, which later came out as a way to push real networks out of the market. But we had done a deal where Microsoft had given us about $2 million, and we had gone to Universal Music and cut a deal with them to kind of fund their streaming for 2 years in return for them using, you know, Microsoft's format. This is all well-documented and huge lawsuit. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but, at the time we were working with Interscope Records. So we're working with, you know, Paul Rosenberg, Jimmy Ivey. We had Courtney Holt and then a gentleman named Jeff Suey who we're working with. And we helped them put together the very first streaming music for Interscope Records. So Dr. Dre, Eminem's new album, all the, you know, come up that Interscope had during that period. And after about 2 months of doing that, I started realizing that they were basically getting no data and had no control over how people were using the music. And so that kind of made me think, well, you know, granted, we're subsidizing their bill right now, but when that runs out, how are they going to derive value from the streaming content and preserve the value? And I don't think that was an uncommon idea. And obviously that was the original nexus of the DRM space. So, you know, we did a lot of work with all these major artists. I'm looking up on the wall. I mean, we even did a deal with Jay-Z and Linkin Park and Coca-Cola. And we found that DRM was an effective tool. It was more of a marketing tool than it was a security tool. Because if we all remember in the early days of DRM, there was this Windows Media License Acquisition window that popped up, and it was annoying, but it was an opportunity. And some people, you know, took that one direction and used it as an opportunity to install toolbars on people's machines. But we took it as an opportunity to and we had a close relationship with Michael Robertson, mp3.com. We took it as an opportunity to find ways to use DRM to help market the content by getting the user to enter an email address before they get a free song. We did this deal with Jay-Z and Rockefeller and Linkin Park and Coca-Cola working with Spark Art, where they had a track called Dirt Off Your Shoulder. It was a remix between Linkin Park and Jay-Z that Coca-Cola had kind of been involved in, and they wanted to get 1 million people to forward it around. And then once the 1,000,000th person forwarded it, it unlocked. So we learned early on that DRM had more use than just security. It also worked great in marketing. And then of course, you know, Apple comes on the scene and they try and implement their own DRM, but then their players don't work with the MP3 standards. So then Steve Jobs writes this tome about how DRM is bad and we're going to drop it. And really, he just did that so that they could expand the iTunes ecosystem. But now all streaming music uses DRM, whether it's Apple Music or, you know, Spotify, Rhapsody, even Napster, who's still in business as Europe, is the largest streaming music service. They all use DRM. Now, DRM is definitely not a massively effective anti-piracy tool. DRM is akin to the lock on the door of your house, lock on your car, your PIN code on your ATM card, the special code on your phone. It's an entry-level best barrier to the content. It prevents casual reforwarding. It allows you to know when someone plays or doesn't play your content. It allows you to expire the content. It allows you to control, for the most part, how the content is played out. Now, obviously, there are holes in that ecosystem, especially around, for the most part, and this will change soon thanks to some stuff that's going on with Google, but screen capturing and video recording are the result of DRM, because DRM prevents you the ability to just take that file you have, that streaming, you know, HLS or Dash file or whatever format it is, and just casually give it to somebody else or download it using a download manager and give it to them. Mm-hmm. And so DRM actually drives in the video space. It actually helps solve piracy in conjunction with watermarking because it drives the criminals out the windows instead of the doors. And when they come out the windows, you're standing there. In other words, you know, DRM drives users to screen cap and screen record and video record, which is kind of like the perfect place to lay in wait with watermarking. So as you know, what we're going to be talking about, the Video Security Summit, this Every Stream Unique, the rise of watermarking and DRM in the OTT space. DRM is an excellent complementary technology to watermarking and vice versa. And so, you know, for us, that's kind of, you know, that's a business opportunity. So.
Yep. Well, that's great. So you've talked a little bit about kind of glaring needs out there in general for DRM and where it, you know, I hesitate to say it falls short. It's like it needs to be complemented with other things.
Right.
But, give me some examples of where you,
sure.
you know, some needs for piracy, whether for anti-piracy
sure.
that kind of step beyond the need to just protect with DRM. You know, what are the kinds of anti-piracy solutions and legal services that you're looking at and that your sure. customers are asking for? And what have you done for some of your customers?
Sure. It's a great question. So, you know, obviously, if you look at kind of how the two technologies work together and you just, you know, take watermarking at its face value and DRM at its face value, you know, taking the watermarking technology and using it with DRM seems simple and obvious. You know, what we've looked at the space is that, you know, in the past 2 years, streaming has become the clear dominant model for media delivery. Yes, movie theaters are going to reopen, but they're never going to be able to capture the, you know, lucrative gains that studios are making off doing tent post early release productions on the web instead of going into the theater. And there's a lot of politics now about what movies can show where as well. We have all these geo-national things affecting where movies can be played. A great example is this, you know, No Time to Die that came out. And then the Chinese released a movie about the, you know, Chosun Reservoir fight in Korea, but their movie did $205 million in China, but you know, No Time to Die only did $135 million because it couldn't enter China. These are things that are going to affect, you know, more and more the use of this technology. So previously watermarking was a pre-release technology. And so we have clients that are using it for digital dailies, screeners, digital review, Academy Awards voting, et cetera, et cetera. And the technology mostly designed by, you know, the big heavyweights in the industry, somewhat cumbersome to implement, okay, because they provide you a watermarking toolkit and then you've got to go implement it and insert it into your ecosystem. And it's not cheap. And again, that's the origin of the existing watermarking technology. So where we came at this is that for, you know, where we're going with OTT streaming, because of all the fragmentation on all the different devices and the fact that Apple has a different casting standard than Google, has a different casting standard than Roku, we have all this fragmentation among all these different operating systems and devices, computer standards, et cetera. The potential for watermarking in the OTT space with DRM is significant. And so we took a look at the space and we realized there are companies that have watermarking kits who operate multi-DRM platforms. But what we wanted to do a little different and how we think watermarking and DRM work in OTT is that somebody needs to figure out a way to scale watermarking in the OTT space because the existing model that's used pre-release, it doesn't scale. And watermarking is very CPU intensive. It's very resource intensive. And to date, no one's done a good, effective job of coming up with a universal watermarking with DRM solution for OTT as a result. There's a bunch of reasons. The technological implementation of watermarking kits is complex. Inserting them into your video workflow is complex. The pricing models, if you don't understand how OTT commerce works, can be dangerous. You can't go with the commerce models for pre-release content on OTT because, again, we're talking hundreds of millions of plays versus 10 of the most important plays of the last week of the development of a movie, right? When you have a senior exec, 10 of them watching a final cut of a movie, the scale is low, but the value is high. When you have 10 million users watching a live event or streaming a new movie, the volume is high, but each user is not as important as these studio execs, right? So
And you're you're not protecting a $100 million property. You're talking about a $10 or a $29.
You're protecting $101 million properties, basically, at the end of the day, right? And so, you know, while if we look at the AVOD industry, obviously they're not going to be a target for watermarking, right? It's long tail content, but they all use DRM because they want the content to stay in the boundaries of the business. But if we shift over to some of these more premium brands, and obviously, you know, ByDRM, we have a lot of them, a lot of clients in the space. Depending on the value of your content, that's the value of watermarking. A good example is, you know, e-learning companies or niche content companies. Their one video or the newest training video or educational video, it could easily be a $5 million revenue project. But, you know, again, those things are easily leaked. And so niche content is very susceptible to this. So kind of to, you know, come back, watermarking with DRM doesn't scale well today. And so ByDRM is taking a different approach. And that approach is to come with a universal approach that occurs at the origin of the content. So there's obviously multiple different methods of watermarking today. You know, to summarize them very simply put, there's the forensic insert at the origin. There's the edge AB switching where you take two copies of a movie and you just interleave them into some final variant that goes out the wire that you later on have the algorithm to determine, you know, which stream was muxed which way.
Yeah.
And that's very CDN dependent. And then there's the client side solution where, you know, the client initializes some data. And as the data frame, video frames come down, the client takes some server initiated data and personalizes the video frames before it passes them up. Those are kind of the three models. We are focused right now on this origin model because we feel like that's the low hanging fruit to get into the business because of the complexity of all the different video work paths. Mm-hmm. So we have developed a product, this multi-mark product, which we're launching later this month. We're going to launch with the multi-mark server. So today we have our multi-key service, which is our multi-DRM, multi-tenancy software as a service platform. Lots of servers everywhere, lots of clients, all data firewalled. We also license our DRM server, the multi-key server, as a standalone, you know, in-network, on-prem, in-your-cloud solution for clients who want more arms around the solution but don't want to maintain DRM or develop DRM. They just need a widget to do DRM in their network. Mm-hmm. We're taking that same methodology here with Multimark. We're rolling out the server first. And today, there are a bunch of different prevalent watermarking kits that are out there. ByDRM's approach is we intend to aggregate the watermarking kits inside the Multimark server so that you have an off-the-shelf watermarking solution, which doesn't exist today, where if you have your own Content Armor license or your own NextGuard license, you can use our server with your license, or you can use our license and buy it from us. So there's flexibility there as well, because obviously a lot of media operators already have licenses for watermarking kits. So that's going to be our unique approach to the market, is creating an aggregated origin, you know, directed solution where a client can drop it in at the media packaging level when they're encoding or transcoding or packaging their content in any cloud. They can run this, you know, real-time server in between their content and the user, and the server will take the content, forensically insert the watermark, encrypt it with DRM, and then stream it off to whatever your streaming infrastructure is. This is not a streaming server, although it does streaming, but we're not trying to enter the streaming market. We have to offload the outputted content somewhere. And so we've made the determination that by being a streaming origin, that's the best way to approach it, because then clients can offload it to whatever. They can use their cloud native CDN. They can use a non-cloud native CDN. They can use a massive HDB hosting farm, however they decide to offload it. But this server inserts itself into the video work path with a universal solution at the origin.
Well, that sounds like it takes care of several of your requirements. One is you want to do it as close to the origin as possible, like origin as in a CDN terminology, but also or the origin.
Where the content is.
The point of creation as you can.
Yeah.
So that helps you protect higher value content earlier on. It sounds like that's part of it.
Yes.
You're addressing the scalability situation because you're doing it closer to the origination point of the content.
And clients can scale up multiple instances of the server wherever their content is sitting.
So that leads me to kind of the other elephant in the room question, if you will, is that ByDRM is merged or has been acquired by OVH, which is a cloud company. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, about a year and a half ago, my partner, Ron Baker, who was the chairman of the company, and we started talking and saying, hey, you know, something's happening. Like, we started seeing the traffic on our network going from 40 million to 50 million to 60 to 70 million licenses a day in a pretty short period of time. And we started, you know, looking at our books and looking at the business saying, you know what, this might finally be the time to look at the market and see what's out there for ByDRM. And so we engaged an investment bank and we met with our financial advisors and we got into the process, right? And after about, 6 to 8 months of doing the process, we decided, hey, you know what, let's just pull back and let's focus on the business. It's going so good. The market is so wide right now. We don't need anyone's money, but, you know, it'd be a nice to have. So we tabled the process. And then out of nowhere, my current boss, who is the CTO of OVH now, Thierry, Soche, he was previously the CTO of Via Access Orca. And so Thierry contacted us and said, hey, you know, we think there's something there. OVH is getting ready to make some pretty significant moves. Let's talk. And so that kind of led into where we're at today, which is that, you know, OVH, which is a brand name that not a lot of people in your audience are probably familiar with, but they're about to be familiar with it. OVH is the largest hosting company in Europe. We have 28 data centers and POPs around the world. We're all over Europe. We just opened another data center in Germany yesterday. We have data centers in Montreal, data center in Vancouver. We're opening one in Toronto. We've got one in Portland. We've got one in Virginia. And we're going to be going public in the next couple of weeks. And so, you know, OVH as a cloud company, it allows ByDRM to somewhat step out from the pack. So, you know, if you look across the industry, you've got, you know, the conditional access companies that have watermarking that are coming into the DRM space now, and you've got DRM companies that are acquiring, you know, CAS-like technology or watermarking technology, and they're all kind of starting to do the same thing. And then they add in anti-piracy services, which I think I actually missed in your last question. And so now the industry looks like DRM, watermarking, anti-piracy services, okay? Mm-hmm. But the difference between ByDRM and all these other companies at this point is that, you know, they're all relying on public clouds. So they use the traditional, you know, AWS, GCP, Azure for operating their business. The vision between ByDRM and OVH that's shared from, you know, the CEO, Michelle Pollan, the CTO, all the way down to our team here is that, you know, we are now the sole DRM company, content security company, actually, because we're rebranding ourselves as a content security company this month, that has our own cloud. And a massive cloud and a massively scalable, highly charged computing environment. So, you know, OVH's background is the reason that they rose so quickly in the cloud space is that OVH doesn't need raised floor and air conditioning to run a data center. OVH has the founder, Octave Kalaba, and his father and his brother, Miroslav, have invented this water cooling technology that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. And it's akin to kind of some of the stuff you see on gaming computers, but to scale in a data center with hundreds of thousands of server instances. So for OVH to stand up a data center, we need power, water, and internet, and that's it. We don't need an expensive building. We don't need air conditioning. We don't need raised floor. And OVH builds their own servers. So in Roubaix, France, up on the Belgian border, OVH has a massive warehouse facility where they build hundreds of servers a day from the bare metal up. And in fact, they own a fabrication company next door who builds the custom everything for the company. So OVH has completely redesigned how clouds are going to operate. And so that's the vision. Now, with regards to kind of, you know, ByDRM's existing and future cloud strategy, my charter from the CEO and CTO is to continue to be, you know, multi-cloud, because we have a lot of relationships in GCP and a lot of relationships at AWS and a lot of relationships with Azure. And so we continue and will continue to expand on those relationships. We're actually getting ready to make an announcement about our relationship with GCP and our new integration that will be the first DRM company that has done a DRM integration with GCP Transcoder. Doesn't seem like a big deal, but we've been working on it for 6 months, and I think we're ahead of the pack on that. We're deep into AWS. We're deeply integrated with Elemental. We have several different clients inside Amazon as well, and we're an Amazon client. So we're also a Google partner. We're a Google vendor. We're a licensee of Widevine. So we have deep relationships with the existing cloud partners that we're going to continue to cultivate. But, you know, one of the things that we're looking at is, since watermarking to scale is a current problem, both from a technology standpoint and a commercial standpoint, how can BuyDRM and OVH come to the marketplace with a highly scalable solution that will allow watermarking to really extend into the OTD space, but do it in a way that's affordable and effective and scalable?
Well, that's great. So the technical questions come to mind, which we don't really have, we don't have time for. In fact, I thought this would be a 15-minute interview and we're into a half an hour, but it's fun and it's great. And I don't think there's any need to cut it back because you got a lot of insights and it's fun to listen. So I guess where are we going in the future here? Obviously scalability, global reach, getting further into your relationships with the dominant players in the cloud, if you will. I think of AWS, for example. They have a Speak API, so I can integrate things with the AWS ecosystem with Elemental.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're building something like that with watermarking.
We are, and we're also a Speak partner. But, I think prediction-wise, you asked me kind of what's my advice for anyone, but it's really, if I make a prediction, it's wrapped up in advice.
Yeah.
I see a couple of things happening. One, I see the most successful OTT operators embracing watermarking and leaping out ahead of their competitors. And I base that on what's happened with watermarking coming into play with cricket and European football on live events and how quickly they were able to shut down tons of global piracy rings. So that's the first thing. If you're an OTT operator, you've got to start creating a watermarking strategy. I don't care who you work with or which vendor or which approach. You got to come up with a watermarking strategy now and not get flat-footed as you go into 2022. Secondly, there's going to be this kind of weird dynamic between content delivery networks and watermarking companies and content security companies. And it goes something like this. Today, CDNs, a large portion of their revenue is the caching and online storage. Yeah. And the thing is, with forensic watermarking, you don't really cache the file at the edge for very long because each file is unique for each user. Right. So the CDNs aren't dumb. And, a great example, Akamai, Fastly, Limelight, one's a partner, one's a client, and one's just a company out there. I'll let you do the math. They have all gotten smart to this. And so they've all started implementing edge AB watermarking at the edge, right? So that's a thing that's going to happen. And what's going to be interesting is to see how does the industry go at that from a commercial standpoint. In other words, how do they engage the CDN on this and keep their costs down, but still accomplish the end result of ending piracy? And, the last one is, I feel like there's going to be more consolidation in the watermarking space. If you look at the recent acquisition of Content Armor by Cinemedia, we're down now to about five companies that own basically all, either have derived watermarking from Digimark or other patents or have their own intellectual property or are free and clear to operate. There is now, there's at least two more companies out there that are independent operators that I feel are acquisition targets. And I won't name them, but there will be some kind of consolidation in the industry because as the OTT watermarking revenue starts to hockey stick, people are going to turn to these kind of remaining independent watermarking companies and want to snatch one of them up. So that would be the last piece of advice I'd give.
Yeah, well, that's very insightful. And there are a lot of players out there. And if we follow the natural evolution of any industry category in technology, you start with tens of them, you end up with a few of them, and then you end up with just a handful. And we've seen that play out with middleware. We've seen it play out with encoders. We've seen it play out with many, many things, almost every category in the business.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Well, listen, I guess we're done. You've given some advice. You've given us a look at the future. You've given us some history, and I'm very grateful to know more about the company. And hopefully, our viewers will know the same. And so, I want to thank you once again very much, Christopher, for number one, for supporting our conference and for this fabulous interview. And hopefully, we'll see you at the conference, and we'll see you again soon.
Yeah, and Steven makes a good point. If you're watching this video right now, you probably know this mug, but what you don't know is this is the first ever video security, DRM security, content security centric show in the history of our industry. I've been attending these shows for 27 years. I've been to NAB like 25 times, IBC like 17 times. The point is this is a great opportunity for our industry. And this is a one of a kind, first of its kind show. So, you know, if you're not familiar with the brand, get familiar with it quickly, but definitely sign up for the event. It's going to be awesome. All of the sponsors are all the tier one operators in the business. So you're going to get a lot of good germane information that's easy to access and digest. And of course, with Mesa producing it, it's going to be a professionally produced show. So you're not going to just be sitting in a Zoom conference.
Oh, thanks so much, Christopher. That's just great.
Bye, everybody. Thank you, Stephen.